From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, six fishermen are lost in the Bering Sea after their crabber disappears within sight of St. George Island. Three others are rescued after going hard aground near Accutan, and Southeast fishermen are gearing up for crabbing. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Six fishermen are lost and presumed dead after their crabber disappeared in the Bering Sea early Saturday morning. After nearly 3 days, U.S. Coast Guard called off the fruitless search for the fishing vessel destination Monday evening. All that was found of the crabber was a floating tangle of debris that included the boat's emergency locator beacon, several buoys, and a life ring. The vessel was on its way from Dutch Harbor to the crabbing grounds with a stop in St. Paul planned, according to the Associated Press, but the destination's EPIRB, which activates when submerged in seawater, signaled trouble early Saturday morning 2 miles northwest of St. George Island. Coast Guard Petty Officer Sean Eggert says the cutter Morgenthau, five air crews from Air Station Kodiak, several volunteer vessels, and villagers on the beach responded to the distress signal, searching more than 5,700 square nautical miles with no luck.
We really don't know what happened out there, so we can't really assume that the vessel sunk or how that may have happened or what may have happened to this crew.
Eggert says the Coast Guard has opened an investigation into what happened. It's Alaska's deadliest commercial fishing accident since the Katmai sank in Amchitka Pass in 2008. Seven of the Katmai's 11 crew members died. The destination is the first Bering Sea crabber loss since 2005 when the Big Valley sank, taking five of six crew members with it. Owners of the destination say their boat was in good shape at the time of its disappearance. Michael Barcott is the attorney representing the vessel's principal owner, David Wilson, a Sand Point fisherman who now lives in Washington State. Barcott says the owners don't know what happened to the destination either.
We'll be working with the Coast Guard to try to sort that out to understand what happened, but right now it is a mystery. Everyone's thoughts and prayers are with the families.
The destination's owners have declined to name the lost crew until their families have been consulted. However, one man, Dylan Hatfield, named his brother, Derek Seabold, a crewman aboard the destination, whom he remembered in an Associated Press story on Tuesday. Another crewman, Larry O'Grady of Paulsbow, Washington, was identified by family members to the Seattle Times. Meanwhile, three people were rescued Monday morning after their fishing vessel ran aground near Accutan. The fishing vessel Predator was taking on water at a rate the pumps could not keep up with, and so, according to Petty Officer Jean-Paul Rios, the Coast Guard launched a helicopter rescue.
The Coast Guard helicopter got on scene, hoisted three individuals off of the vessel, and transported them back to Accutan, and we were told that there was no kind of medical conditions.
The fate of the vessel is less certain. Rios says the Predator ran hard aground, and it's unclear whether it can be repaired.
There was a 8-inch crack in the hull of the vessel. That's what was causing it to take on water. I haven't been notified anything about pollution or anything like that. That's something that we'll definitely still keep an eye on.
Weather on the scene at the time of the rescue included 25-mile-per-hour winds and 10-foot seas.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AKTeach or at 907-942-0667.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online anytime at kmxt.org. The first fisheries of the year for many Southeasterners are getting underway. They are the Tanner and Golden King Crab fisheries, which open Friday. Managers are predicting a healthy harvest for Tanners, but another slow year for the Goldens. KFSK's Angela Denning tells us more.
Alaska has dozens of crab species, about seven that are commercially harvested. So what's Tanner crab like? To help answer that question, I asked Joe Stratman, the lead crab biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Southeast. He says Tanners are related to the popular snow crab.
What I always liken it to is when they're at the seafood buffet at their local restaurant, they often see snow crab, which is a kind of Cetes opilio, or Tanner crab here in Southeast. Looks very similar to that. It's a little larger.
Recent markets seem to like Tanner crab, too. Last year's harvest in Southeast was valued at nearly $3 million. 74 permit holders participated in the fishery. They brought in a total of just over 1.3 million pounds. The price per pound averaged $2.23, which is 30 cents higher than the year before. Harvests the last 2 years have been strong, and managers believe that this year should be pretty good, too. The state estimates that there will be 5 million pounds of mature male Tanner crab this season, which is what the fishery targets. That's down from the nearly 5.7 million last year, but still a healthy number. The length of the Tanner fishery will depend on the number of pots that are registered. Simply put, the more pots, the fewer days the fleet has to fish. Last year, the fishery was open for a week in the main areas. Tanner stocks in Southeast have been surveyed annually by the state for about 20 years, and it's shown that the population does have its ups and downs.
You know, what we see in the harvest is fluctuating harvest. They were high in the late 90s, diminished somewhat in the 2000s, and then, you know, starting in the last few years, we seem to see things swing up again.
The Tanner fishery happens at the same time as the Golden King crab fishery, but they are very different. Golden kings are not abundant in Southeast, at least right now. The maximum harvest managers want to see this year is only 105,000 pounds. That's the smallest harvest goal in the last couple of decades. The fishery is managed in seven areas, and each one has catch numbers managers do not want to exceed. Harvests in recent years have been on a decline, and biologists are concerned.
It's hard to know exactly why. I think there's probably, you know, a lot of factors that play into the declines in fishery performance that we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years.
Harvests for six of the seven areas will be reduced this year. Stratman says they will monitor the fishery and close areas if needed, like they did last year. The harvest ended up being 77,000 pounds, with 21 permit holders participating. It's hard for biologists to understand the decline of Golden King crab in Southeast because they have little information to go on, relying on harvest data and port samples during the fishery. And Golden Kings are a little trickier species. They don't reproduce on an annual cycle like other crab. It's more like every 20 months. Commercial crabbing coincides with the Tanner fishery, not according to the crab's life cycle.
So the fishery itself is not really structured around life history events because there's a lot that isn't known on the life history of Golden King crab in Southeast.
Still, the regional Golden King crab fishery is worth money to a few dozen fishermen. Last year, it was valued at about $870,000. The last few years, it brought around $11 per pound. So, for the time being, the state will continue to hold conservative limits on the fishery with hopes that the population will grow stronger. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
Sea star wasting syndrome was first documented in Kachemak Bay in 2014, but it wasn't until last summer that the mysterious infection began killing sea stars in large numbers. Nearly 6 months later, the long-term effects of the die-off and what it may portend for the ecosystem remain unclear. KBBI's Shayla Farzon has more.
Even to the trained eye, the first signs of sea star wasting syndrome are easy to miss.
There tend to be these white lesions. It's kind of what looks like could be scars or raw spots from a bird pecking at it or something like that.
Katie Gavanis is a master's student at the University of Washington. She began monitoring sea stars in Kachemak Bay in 2014 as part of a project with the Center for Alaskan Coastal Studies. At the time, most of the sea stars in the areas she monitored appeared healthy, with only about 10% showing signs of wasting syndrome. But last summer, the infection appeared to spread. Gavanis watched as true stars, the classic five-arm species, died in record numbers. In many cases, they virtually disintegrated, losing multiple arms.
It was pretty eerie, actually. We saw a lot of dismembered true star arms floating around. If the currents and waves were just right, you would get this line of true star arms along the surf line on the beach.
Other species, like the sunflower star, dissolved into what she calls a pile of goo.
What you started to see were what looked like someone had taken a sunflower star and kind of put it in a blender and poured it out in a crevice in the tide pool.
Infected sea stars have appeared along the Pacific coast since the 1970s. But the extent of this latest outbreak, stretching from Baja California to Alaska, is new. In 2014, researchers identified a virus in infected sea stars. But they also found the virus present in preserved museum samples dating back to the 1940s, long before the outbreak began. That suggests there might be other factors contributing to the outbreak, such as changes in temperature or pH. Gavanis says another big unknown is how the loss of sea stars will affect intertidal habitats as a whole. Because sea stars are important predators of other marine invertebrates, like urchins and mussels, their disappearance could have cascading effects on species diversity.
The big thing that I take away from all this is that there's a lot that we do not yet know. And it's pretty fascinating to look at a lot of the connections and also very humbling to realize that there's a lot more that is going on out there than we grasp right now.
Staff with the Center for Alaskan Coastal Studies returned to monitoring sites in Kachemak Bay in late January. Although they didn't see any signs of the disease, they also didn't find any true stars or sunflower stars, the two species hit hardest by wasting syndrome last summer. It's still too soon to say how the die-off will affect sea stars in Kachemak Bay. That's because they often retreat to deeper waters in the winter, making monitoring difficult. Coastal Studies staff and local volunteers will continue tracking sea star populations in the region throughout the year. In Homer, I'm Shayla Farzon.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUCB's Laura Craigle in Unalaska, KFSK's Angela Denning in Petersburg, and KBBI's Shayla Farzon in Homer. KMXT and Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.